I'll call the Senate Finance Committee to order. We've been delayed on other business in the building, but we're here to address the university's budget. It is 12 minutes to 10 o'clock in Juneau, Alaska, the Senate Finance Committee room. Joining me is Chairman Stedman, Chairman Olson, Senators Bishop, Senator Merrick, Senator Keel, and Senator Wilson. As I stated earlier, we're here to have the first hearing on the University of Alaska's FY25 budget. Online is President Pat Pitney, and Director of State Relations is here, Chad Hutchinson. So with that, Chad, you want to introduce your boss and proceed from there?
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. For the record, my name is Chad Hutchinson, State Director of Government Relations. And on the phone today, we have President Pat Pitney. And Pat, if you wanted to get into the presentation, now is a good moment.
All right. Thank you.
Morning, Pat.
Thank you, Chair Hoffman. For the record, my name is Pat Pitney. I'm the President, University of Alaska. I'm on slide two, a map of our great state of Alaska. And just remind everybody, we have three very unique universities, our research university in Fairbanks, our comprehensive urban university in Anchorage, and our regional experiential-based learning university, University of Alaska Southeast, main campus in Juneau. Each of our universities has community campuses aligned with them, and with those community campuses, we're able to reach from Ketchikan to Kotzebue, and we are very proud of the role our community campuses have across the state. The overview, I'm on to page three now. The overview will cover the recent work that our Board of Regents has done on a planning effort called the Roadmap to Empower Alaska. We'll cover enrollment and program highlights, and then budget summary, both from an operating and a capital standpoint, and our legislative priorities. There's appendix that are there for your information. If we have time, we can get into them, but may not go all the way there. So the board, relatively new, changed over board. I think we had six new members in the last 2 years, and they have gotten down to business, and we really appreciate their engagement. Starting last summer through the fall, they've developed a plan called Roadmap to Empower Alaska that is really pointed at Alaska's economy and how our education, workforce, and research with partnerships across the state is going to advance Alaska's economy. Three pillars, very important. First, financially responsible and future-focused. And to me, this says financially stable, from which we can diversify our revenues and build enrollment and gain partnerships. Serving and focusing on state and Arctic leadership through education, research, and workforce, especially in leading the nation in our Arctic research, Arctic policy. I believe it's important as the Arctic becomes a central focus globally that we need Alaskans prepared to be in those conversations. Otherwise, Alaska won't be part of the conversation. It'll just happen. So really that Arctic leadership to me is very important. Quality education and reputation. This group is familiar with the reputational impact that on the university over the last several years. With the stability supported by the legislature, we have changed that dial. Our reputation is growing, And I think the biggest sign of our reputation growing is this year, our first-time freshmen were up 16%. And that incoming class is a sign of hope. As we retain them into the next year and our next year's freshman class grow, that's just a moment, that's a cycle of momentum that we're excited about. Across the board, we grew 4% in enrollment. Within the roadmap, the board identified key strategic priorities, and I'm on page 5. And you'll see these priorities reflected in our budget request. But increasing recruitment, graduation, and retention. Right here, this is all about financial stability. That means our compensation and fixed cost requests being honored. Sustaining facilities maintenance and modernization plan. This is our deferred maintenance strategy. We've had a chance to speak to some of you about that concept of having consistent deferred maintenance funding over time. Achieving cost-efficient operations, yes. Was there a comment?
No, there. Please proceed.
Okay. So achieving cost-efficient operations, this is discipline, operational discipline, doing business well, but doing it efficiently and always having to focus on maintaining the minimum cost structure that we can. UAF reaching R1 research status, you see that prominently in our budget request this year. What this means is UAF would move from into the highest classification of research universities nationally. And it allows more competitiveness in the research area, but more importantly, it brings tremendous talent to our state. And because of the competitive research, that impacts the state as a whole. Our projects are everywhere from Kodiak and Juneau and Anchorage and the North Slope and the West Coast of Alaska, the ship in Seward. This isn't about Fairbanks. This is about the state as a whole. But really important, bringing talent to the state and long-term research growth. Many of you have seen our Empower Alaska branding, working hard on our quality reputation. You've seen that on Gavel to Gavel. We're going to continue to strengthen that branding across the system while letting each of the universities build their programmatic reputations as well. And then finally, building Arctic leaders. The board hasn't quite put that one in there yet. I'm just introducing it this week at the board meeting. But I'm excited about the focus of those strategic priorities and the commitment of our board on those strategic priorities. Next page is our enrollment highlights. And I already covered the our enrollment. So this spring is our third semester year-over-year increase in enrollment. But what I mentioned earlier, most promising is that number of first-time freshmen up at 16% coming in this fall. And that will compound as we get bigger first-time freshman classes in the falls to follow. Our dual enrollment, this is where we have simultaneous K-12 and university enrollment, has grown. We have 3,600 high school students enrolled simultaneously with degree in college credit. What this allows is for the state and the students to have more accessible, more affordable faster time to graduation. And, you know, we're seeing some students come out with a full 2-year degree, coming out of high school and being able to graduate within 2 to 3 years with their baccalaureate degree and continue on for master's. It's a real advantage for students across the state. Our freshman to sophomore retention is at a 5-year high. And I think it's important to note, you know, we often get compared to elite universities in retention. And if you look at the Alaska Performance Scholars or Alaska Performance Scholarship students who are seeking a 4-year degree, our retention rate for those students is 85%. That competes with any university anywhere. Teacher preparation programs continue to grow. 2 years ago, there was an appropriation made that allowed for us to support students in their student teaching year. At 63 scholarships supported student teachers in 23, and we see that growing this coming year, and it makes a big difference. We've expanded the nursing program, also supported by the legislature in the last couple years, and also provided funding for the clinical time where a student has to work as an intern or in their clinical rotation. And so thank you for that support. In a national context, you know, enrollment nationwide was down 3.6% for the incoming class, and we've definitely bucked that trend with a 16% increase. And then at University of Alaska's universities, we are more affordable. Fewer students graduate with debt. Those that do graduate with debt have less debt than their counterparts nationally, and they have higher earnings. So it's a triple whammy in terms of affordability and accessibility at our universities.
Ms. Pitney, we have a question from Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Pitney, can you go back to the teacher preparation and do a little maybe deeper dive if you can? I'm curious as to how we're doing for our outreach for Indigenous teachers in rural Alaska and how many of them were part of these 63 scholarships that were awarded. And you can get back to the committee if you can't answer that right off the top of your head.
Yeah, I can. I will definitely get back on the 63. We have several programs, and in fact, I just recorded a video on Educators Rising Conference that's going to happen in Juneau, I think maybe later this week or next week, where we are working with K-12 schools across the state to find students who have an interest in becoming teachers and working with them early. And that is hitting a lot of our rural areas. But we also have the PETA's program, which is preparing Indigenous teachers for Alaska. And and part of our curriculum is very, very important to focus on culturally relevant instruction practices. So it is top of mind all the time, but precisely on the 63 scholarships, we'll get that breakout for you and back to you. And where they did their practicums. I think that's important.
Thank you, Senator Bishop.
Follow up?
Senator Bishop.
Ms. Pitney, I reach out annually to all my 10 rural school districts, and I've already had 2 video conferences with 2 of my districts, and I've got junior seniors that are wanting to become teachers and come back home. So I can give your staff a list of those districts, and I'd like to see a follow-up with those and tell them about the opportunities.
Thank you, Senator Bishop.
Absolutely.
Ms. Pitney, please proceed. Oh, wait, we have a David?
Thank you. President Pitney, just wondering on the dual enrollment of the 3,600 high school students that are enrolled, What's the normal percentage that stays with the university after high school graduation?
The last look we have is about 50%, which is higher than the retention of non-dual enrolled, but we are definitely looking to increase that proportion.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Ms. Pitney, please proceed.
Okay. The next three pages are just highlights. I'm not going to go through them all. Just want to point to a couple of exciting opportunities at UAA. They successfully competed for the Department of Homeland Security Center of Excellence. That's a 10-year grant, total $46 million, so about $4 to $5 million a year to support Homeland Security and understanding and teaching their this environment. At UAF, I'm on page 8, ASAP and partners received $6 million to help secure electrical grids. This is just one of many of the Department of Energy grants. I think what these highlights show is just a level of momentum that is that stability has brought to this institution. And when we have a stable fiscal financial setting, our faculty, our staff, our leaders can be working across industry with legislators, with businesses, with the co-ops to really advance solutions for Alaska. And going to the University of Southeast, I think the work on mariculture, the education in sustainable ocean farming in Sitka, I think that's a real area of growth for that region and the University of Alaska Southeast, especially Sitka campus, is taking a real leading role there. Okay, enough on the good news. It's hard to do good news when I'm not in person. I feel like I'm going on and on. Now we'll get into the meat of the conversation and a summary on the budget request. So on the operating side, our state funding, the board's state funding request was $29 million, of which $23 million was compensation and other fixed costs. And we had modest program requests of $6 million, and that ranges from student mental health support to public safety to faculty in particular disciplines, including energy resources. Then our next piece on the operating budget is this deferred maintenance strategy. And that it's really a legislative strategy, but if we're successful in this legislative strategy, that would be essentially $35 million impact on the operating budget, but specific and set apart in a fund at revenue for university deferred maintenance. And the $35 million represents an amount that, if consistent, we would not, our deferred maintenance wouldn't grow. And $35 million, if consistent every year, would keep deferred maintenance off the front page of the capital budget. We would not be asking for deferred maintenance. We would have the solution. Over time, the university, through its resources, as our debt impact rolls off, we would be adding to that total to make it a $45 million annual commitment over the next 10 years. To me, it's stability, but it's also getting deferred maintenance off the front page. We wouldn't have to talk about sewer systems and roofs as capital projects. We could talk about, hey, let's do this modern lab instead, where we can go forward. And we've taken care of the deferred maintenance, and we have to report what we're going to do and what we have done back to the legislature in a very accountable way. Very important. Below the line, we put in here the strengthening of competitiveness for our UA athletics, and we put in $2.5 million for each of our athletics programs. As you know, over the course of the budget reductions, athletics kind of took the brunt of it. But more importantly, what I'm trying to start is this concept of, let's put athletics on a stable footing, but then let's come up with a legislative strategy for matching earned revenue and private giving that allows our athletic programs to become excellent. And having come from athletics in the past, if our universities were nationally competitive in hockey, people would look differently at the university, but more importantly, they would look differently about themselves in the state, and nationally, people would look differently at Alaska. And this could be a real pride point for a relatively modest investment. And so we're beginning to work on that as a future opportunity, but there is a need for some stability in the nearer term. I'm going to take a breath here, and I'm going to switch subjects on a little bit to our revenue. We are just now turning our earned revenue streams back on. We had a 4% increase in enrollment in this fiscal year. We anticipate that 4% increase again next fiscal year. We've applied all of that revenue, all of that unrestricted revenue, to our compensation and fixed cost needs and asked for state funding for the rest. The governor's budget reduced the amount, and I'll show you when we get into the next couple of slides, but it just in short, the governor only partially funded our salary and fixed costs with the general fund and increased our non-general fund. We don't have a source of increasing non-general fund that could pay for salaries and fixed costs. And so one of the most important things is having our operating budget reflect our compensation and fixed cost request. Okay. I want to briefly touch on capital because it kind of overlaps some with our operating. So the deferred maintenance and modernization strategy and operating is our preferred solution so that we have consistency and stability. If we don't have that, our annual need on capital is $60 million, and we have our priorities set forward like we always have. But we've been doing this for more than 20 years, since I was budget director for the system in 1998. Deferred maintenance has been our top priority, but it's been inconsistent. And so I'm really looking for the consistency. But absent getting the operating strategy, you know, we have our $60 million deferred maintenance list. The second piece we put in capital, although it is the money would be for operating items, but it's one time. So we ask for it in capital to represent the one-time nature of the investment for UAF to receive R1 research status. And that puts UAF in the top 4% of universities nationally. The $20 million would be spent over the next 3 years and focused primarily on building our graduate PhD enrollment. We currently have, for the classification, we currently have all of the research revenue necessary, but we need to double our PhD graduates in the next 3 years. And this would put specific attention on recruiting, retraining, and retaining and accelerating the time to graduation. With this investment, this one-time investment, research revenue will grow. We will be able to sustain that number of PhD graduates within that total and maintain the momentum. So this is the reason we put it on capital, was because it's one time. And we want it as a one-time investment. Then we diversify our revenues to then maintain this in the future. And so very, very exciting and very much one of the board's strategic priorities. The next two items are health workforce expansion. So this is more specialized simulation space for our health programs, and $6 million general fund and $2 million of grant funding. And then the mariculture program expansion is a mariculture classroom in Sitka. Other revenue includes some from the economic development funding and some from grant funding in the future. The next capital receipt or capital projects are just for receipt authority. So this is having some permission to receive primarily federal funding. I want to note down at the UAF Arctic Emergency Services, that grant was not successful, so we don't need that receipt authority this year. But in total, we're asking for the receipt authority to cover these projects. An exciting development with the Early Childhood Development Center. This allows us to remodel the old U Park School, which is a university facility, into a child care center with a federal earmark. Last on this list is our economic development projects for the drones, continuation of the drone program, which is making significant strides forward, and match for a rail belt carbon capture project that was in the works last spring, and if successful, needed a match. And so we worked last spring to make people aware that if we were successful, which we have been successful, that match is required to carry on that project.
Thank you. We have a question from Senator Bishop.
Ms. Pitney, with this $11 million, that was that a DOE award, Department of Energy award?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Please proceed.
Okay, I'm on page 13. And so you can see in the center of the graph where I have the circles, the Board of Regents budget had compensation requests for state funds of $15 million, and then $2 million was revenue that the university was going to earn, $9 million, if you drop one down line down, $9 million for our fixed costs, which is property insurance, cybersecurity, utilities, et cetera, which we're putting in $5 million. The governor reduced that to state funds of $6 million and said you know, cover it with non-state funds. We can't generate that level of non-state funds in the coming year. And again, coming back to stability, having that financial stability for our compensation and fixed costs allows everything else to happen. So it's vitally important that we need to put to get the state funding for compensation and fixed cost. There were other changes down below as the programs to support state and Arctic leadership. You can see the board requested $6 million, figuring it can we can leverage another $6 million of other funds, whether it be tuition or federal funding to support those programs. None of those were accepted. Further down on page 20, there's the list of the $6 million, and it's made up of about 20 different programs. The tuition assistance that's in the reduction in tuition assistance for National Guard in the governor's budget is what they believe is truing up to the use of those funds. And I believe it's a transfer over to National Guard for them to use it for other education opportunities. So there was an amount of money provided to the National Guard that then the university provided scholarships. Eventually that money was put into the university budget. In all of the cuts, that funding was maintained for that program. And so that has completely been held harmless with all reductions. Then the last piece is the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. This is $200,000 to continue the energy work group convenings that have been happening. Lastly, the circle on the bottom is the TVEP program. If the TVEP program is not reauthorized, that would be $6 million of technical vocational education programming funding to the university, things like practical nurse assistant funding. One of the major successes of the TVEP funding was our process technology program. But as we're working on expanding our aviation maintenance and technology, our construction management, all of those startups on vocational education will suffer. And UA across our community campuses and our voc ed programs at our main campuses, we provide 90% of the voc tech education not associated with union apprenticeships, but all other vocational education in the state. So this $6 million is very meaningful. So reauthorization of TVEP is critical. Any questions before I move on?
Yes, we do have a question from Chairman Stedman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you help me a little bit on the $11 million on compensation? Does that include a bunch of hollow receipt authority, or where's the targeted fund source for this, that $9 million?
Yeah, that's the problem. There isn't a revenue source behind it. It's hollow. We would have to, reduce programs, we would have to adjust and figure out where to come up with $9 million, where to have that $9 million materialize. And it's going to, largely it would have to be less people, because we just don't have that revenue stream. That revenue stream just will not materialize. We expect that we can earn $7 million in our tuition enrollment and our indirect cost recoveries that are allowable to use for general costs. And we've applied that in the Board of Regents area, in the Board of Regents request. We applied that $7 million. Getting to $21 million, we don't We don't have an avenue to do that. It just doesn't work.
Senator Stedman. Thank you, Senator Stedman. Please proceed.
I'm on page 14, and this is just a reminder that of what makes up our budget. And we have the state funding, the general funds, which is our, you know, primary base, unrestricted funds. Those unrestricted funds are the ones that we are able to use to apply to our fixed costs. Those designated and restricted funds are things like federal grants or auxiliaries where the funding can't cover the cost of what somebody else says we need to do or have asked us to do, and we have accepted. And so really we're talking about a much smaller amount than the full $850 million, because that restricted amount is the work we're doing on behalf of others. So it's really the general fund and the unrestricted is where we have our ability to move. At the very bottom, we have the interagency receipt transactions that go, that's just double accounting. So when people say you have a $900 million budget, we really don't, because that's double accounting for us. It's interagency receipts, it's sometimes receipt authority that doesn't, you know, excess receipt authority. But our true, you know, how our operating budget is we're in that 800 and, you know, this year in the $815 million range. Page 15 is our unrestricted fund sources and our designated and restricted fund sources. So you see the first two, tuition and student fees. And student fees are pointed to a particular equipment or special classroom space, or sometimes a fee if there's a tremendous amount of travel associated with the course. So really you have the tuition and then the indirect cost recovery. This is the amount that federal grants pay to support the management, the facilities and utilities associated with those grants, and that's available. University receipts, of that $40 million, about $7.5 million is from our natural resources fund distribution, and the remaining are things like athletic tickets, if you have a theater production, if you have an unrestricted gift from a partnership, or if you have a partnership opportunity where university is paying part of it and a company is paying part of it, that's all in there. Then you see the TBEP funding, and then interest income. This is the interest income we earn on our working capital. We are at relatively high interest rates, so that's good. That will reduce over time. And steady state for our interest income is usually about $3 million. But we've had it as low as $1 million when there was no interest rates at all. And then you can see the federal on the designated and restricted, you have federal, and then university receipts. This is where we have a company that pays for a grant or a contract, and also for scholarships out of the foundation. And then our auxiliaries, that's housing, food service, et cetera. And other state is, this is state grants. So really it's that unrestricted revenue sources that we're focused on, well, and the restricted, we're focused on growing to have that stream and have a more diversified revenue base. But it's going to take it's going to take that enrollment growth, stability now, so we can get the enrollment growth for that to be to grow. Any questions before I move off of that one?
No questions. Please proceed.
Okay. So this is just another view of our operating cost compensation, 14.7, 17.5 total. This is a wage increase of 2.5% and for all employee groups. We have three unions of forthcoming, and then our staff who are non-bargaining, and then our health benefit increases. We were able to hold our health benefit costs stable for several years, and this is just shoring up for kind of the post-COVID bounce on health. Our property insurance premiums have been going up astronomically. So 2.6 million increase. The property insurance market in Alaska, and I'm sure you've heard this from other employers, is extreme. We are looking into self-insurance for the first layer, and potentially, and then building up, which we would have to build in a self-insurance risk pool similar to the state. It would take us tremendous time to do that, but we are looking into the need or the possibility. We would still need this to build that self-insurance pool. In the meantime, while we are building a self-insurance pool, we may be working with co-chairs and OMB and Ledge Finance about potentially riding the state's self-insurance pool until we can build our own.
Just a reminder, Ms. Pitney, we have approximately a half an hour left. Whatever we don't finish today, we'll take up later. But we have a question from Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Pitney, what's the underwriters tell you why they're increasing your premiums? You got your own fire department, you got your own police department. So why, what are they telling you?
So this is on the property side. So like flood, earthquake, storm. And it's not that we are having tremendous claims. It is just the claims that the market is having, like Murbach, like the earthquake in Anchorage. We had very, very few claims during those events. I think we had one claim in Matsu and one claim in Anchorage for the earthquake, and they were minor. But it's the environment, and we also have had insurance companies leave Alaska. So we can give you more background on that if you'd like, but it's significant, and K-12 is facing similar issues.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Please proceed.
So other fixed costs are, investments in IT and cybersecurity. As we try to improve our efficiency, our information systems and workflow systems are critical to that, but more importantly, protecting the data we have from a cybersecurity standpoint. Continuing to add to our facilities maintenance and preventative maintenance in our operating budget is a critical need. And then we have utilities and contractual fixed costs that are going up. So this is just more detail on that. Here we go. Senator Bishop, if you look at the bottom of page 17, if economic inflation, social inflation from legal system abuse, supply chain constraints, and increasing catastrophic weather are the reasons they're giving us on the property insurance. much more succinct than what I had said. Page 18 is just more detail. I think I've covered that. Page 19, discussion of our deferred maintenance and modernization strategy. In the period of fiscal year 10 to 15, there was consistency in supporting deferred maintenance at the state level. During that time, the university received $35 million. That is the only time in our recent history that our backlog hasn't grown. So that's one reason on the $35 million. The other reason the $35 million investment was discussed is because it is about what the legislature has funded the last 3 years and passed. Unfortunately, that funding has been vetoed. The governor said, come up with a plan. So this is a planned approach. And the board said, administration, figure out a way to solve this problem so we're not in this always uncertainty around deferred maintenance. And after working with Department of Revenue, talking with AHFC, this was the approach. And at $35 million, we could have both small project cash amounts, but as you have a larger project, when you have a 1950s building that either needs to be completely replaced or kind of replaced inside the shell, we could bond for that, whether it be, you know, through the most economical path, whether that be the bond bank or whether it be through our own bonding. If we bonded for a larger project, that project would have to come to the legislature because anything with debt service of $2 million or more requires another layer of approval. So the legislature would still have control. Additionally, we would have a project list. We would work from that project list. If the legislature said, well, we don't want you working on that project, we could we would take that project off of our list. So there would still be legislative control, and we would have reporting on what we accomplished and what the next year's plan would be. If it's a sense of control to modify this to provide a slightly different sense of control, we're happy to work with the legislature on what that would look like. I'm looking for the stability so we can make progress consistently. We can have a planned approach to this. Any questions on the deferred maintenance strategy?
We do have a question. It may not be on deferred maintenance, but Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The university president took your time warning seriously and presented faster than my mind works. Back on slide 16, I had a question about the IT and cybersecurity. I'm not sure if I'm understanding that slide right, that this would get us to a little less than $2 million spent on cybersecurity and an $800 or $900 million operation. Would that be the new total, or is that the incremental investment?
That's the incremental.
Okay.
Our IT spend is in the, you know, when you, collectively of all IT is in the around the range of $50 million. Specific to cyber, in the last 3 years, we've had to gear that up. And as you know, there's been no explicit funding for cybersecurity. So it's been reallocation into it just because it's such a risk area for every institution. And knock on wood, we have not had major cybersecurity breaches, but it's because we're working diligently every day.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The executive branch has, I think, very appropriately asked for some added investments in cybersecurity. I'd like to look at the university's requests and lay them alongside each other, get a sense of appropriate scale. If I might, another question on the next slide. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On slide 17, when you look at the compensation pieces, I see most of the bargaining units, but there's a new one if I followed the papers correctly. So the question for the president is, before we're out of the session, will we see the contract for those, I forget the right name, the graduate research workers before the legislature for its monetary terms?
It is my absolute dream and hope that the group will come to agreement before the session is over. And I've made that point very clear to both bargaining teams that a contract has to be approved through the executive branch and the legislature before we can move it forward. And so the word I'm getting from the union is that they're not in a rush. And I don't want it to wait till next year, but that's among the that's up to the negotiations. So we'll let that play through.
Mr. Chairman, shared hope. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Going back to page 20, Ms. Pitney.
So I mentioned that the $6 million in the programs to support state and Arctic leadership. If you focus on the first four, mental health and campus safety are our first areas that of additional need. The second area, consistent with our roadmap, is recruitment and retention support. Then we've been working hard on having our environment represent the environment of our state, improving the number of Indigenous students, faculty, and staff that is reflective of our state environment, our community's environment, and this would be an investment in those goals. The final category is much more focused on specific programs. So at Anchorage, psychology and school counselors program and engineering project management are two programmatic areas that they've been working in partnership with other entities to grow, and shoring up base funding for those programs is on the request. For UAF, energy resource engineering, wildlife biology, marine policy, and healthcare management are areas that will have growing enrollment, but having some quite modest amount of base general fund to shore the base of those programs up as requested. Then there's work on food security and then for UAS, base advancement on mariculture and maritime training. As you know, we had some one-time funding in there, but it's turning that into a long-term base approach. And then last is hazard prediction for the Glacier Lake outburst in Juneau, but that could be leveraged across the state. So those are the $6 million in program with requests. How are we doing on time?
You got a little more than 15 minutes.
Okay, I can do this. So we're on page 21. Just a reminder of legislative priorities that are out there. The education tax credits have a sunset date, and changing that sunset date to 5 to 10 years from now is critical. The tax credits are worth in the range of $4 million annually. And with a slightly revised approach, it could be there could be additional funding, but getting that sunset date move forward is critically important, again, for some of the stable funding. The Alaska Performance Scholarship, the Student Financial Support, Senate Bill 56 and House Bill 148. The Alaska Performance Scholarship is a very important component to our recruitment and retention. And I think a point that's really important for people to understand is 80% of students who graduate from University of Alaska schools are living and working in the state. In fact, more are living, but they're both living and working in the state a year after graduation. For students who choose to go outside to school, the state only gets 25% of those back in the long run. So if we want a workforce solution, keeping students in state and incentivizing students to come to Alaska to go to school is a key piece to our workforce. And that Alaska Performance Scholarship support is one of the best tools. I think one of the biggest changes to this program is where we're announcing to students after their junior year that they are eligible. Here, currently, we don't tell students they're eligible for this until August, after they've graduated from high school, after they've already decided where they're going to go. We need to tell them early so we can use that as an incentive and a recruitment for those to keep as many students as possible in state. And so that getting that passed this year is also very critically important. And we talked earlier about the TVEP extension. So any questions on that before I move on?
Leave no questions. Oh, there is a question by Senator Bishop.
Stedman was first.
Senator Stedman.
Almost Bishop. Yeah, on the TVEP, the auditor was suggesting that we move away from the structure that we have and go into a grant, competitive grant program for fairness. What are your thoughts on that?
So I'm going to be measured here. The distribution of the TVEP funding of, which I'm pretty sure I'm right here, is 45% to the university, of which some of that is then passed through to the Pipeline Training Center. The number of students that we have in our vocational programs well exceeds that allocation. And if you look at the criteria of the program accountability that we put forward, so the university does a competitive grant process on its TVEP funding. We have regional distribution. We report to the legislature every year on our TVEP. So although the Department of Labor isn't managing the university is following those statutes to get the most and be the most accountable with those TVEP funds. But we have programs across the state that are throughout our community campuses. The current Department of Labor grant that is competitive takes a lot of administrative process. It's the STEP grant, but the university is eligible for one grant. The entire university that offers 90% of the vo-tech in the state is eligible for one. And so it would be problematic for the university to be only able to have one application. The other thing is with the TVET funding, we are able to have a three-year runway for programs. And we've used it very much for the startup. And then we try to transition to an ongoing base program, whether it be from general fund or it's got tuition backing. So it would be problematic unless designed right. And I fear that it's difficult to design it right in the short period of time we have left in this session.
Senator Stedman. Thank you, Senator Stedman. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Ms. Pitney. I know we've got a request in, I do, from my office on SB 132 on the education tax, head tax credit that would go a long ways to help with your deferred maintenance. So I know that's in front of your Board of Regents for review. So hopefully that'll come back in a positive fashion and we could add another bullet here. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Further questions, Ms. Pittman? Please proceed.
Okay, so on page 24, this is our just a quick review on our 24 supplemental. 2 years ago, we were provided one-time funding spread across 2 years to do some key economic development projects. This included mining and mariculture, drones, and energy. Drones does not need an extension, but the other programs need an extension of those funds into the next year or two to finalize the projects. Heavy oil was another one. So there's term extensions for those economic development projects in our supplemental request, and they are in the governor's supplemental. Because we're getting some really good news in our federal funding, we believe that we'll need an additional amount of federal receipt authority. So that's out there. And a couple of the things that added to that 10-year grant from Homeland Security is one. And then we have the Affiliated Research Center, which is a DOD partnership. This is a cap increase, but that's a 10-year award that is a task order type approach. So, and then all of the Department of Energy grants. So we just think we need to shore up our receipt authority actually for both 24 and 25. And then the other supplemental request is for the Kenai Peninsula roof repair, which had the roof trusses were not holding it, and we currently have that building. We're not using that building until we can get it fixed. This was something we learned of in the fall. If we had that stability in deferred maintenance funding, these type of things wouldn't show up. Okay. The next several pages from 25 to 29 are just updates on our economic development projects. And I wanted to, number one, thank the legislature for supporting these, but also stay accountable to that money and keep people apprised of where we're at. They've made a huge difference. I'm really excited about the heavy oil recovery project. Of course, the drones. Alaska is on the front of being the first state to have both commercial manned and unmanned freight, and it's because of our position, the safety levels with FAA, that we're being able to test this. So super excited, but it covers mariculture and the others. And I don't need to go into it in detail, just wanted it to be for your awareness. And then finally, we went into a little bit more detail on the capital budget. Don't need to go into that today. And lastly, on page 34, there's a look at our employment. And the biggest thing it shows is that we have more people that are coming on directly funded on our restricted dollars. So.
Thank you for that presentation. Are there questions or comments from the Committee of the Whole on the university's operating budget for FY25? Do you have any closing comments, Madam President?
Thank you, Chair Hoffman, for the opportunity. And I, my comments are just focused on, we have tremendous momentum, and our workforce and our workforce needs in the state are many, and we're part of the solution. And that fiscal stability, that base stability is critical to us continuing this momentum that is really pretty extraordinary and exciting. I'm so looking forward to next fall.
Thank you. I thank you. But a few years ago, the legislature put an emphasis upon nurses and healthcare providers, and the university has stepped up. You know, I would like to request that you, as president, take a second look and possibly make a priority of the need for teachers in the state of Alaska. We are, I believe, having academic problems in recruitment and retention. I know there's several factors that are a result of it, but I believe that one area that the university can help is trying to get more teachers in the mix and addressing recruiting students to enter the education field. With that,
excellent.
Additional comments by members? Seeing none, it is 5 minutes to 11. We've completed the work for today. And tomorrow we will be meeting at 9 a.m. The committee will begin two-day process on public hearings on the operating budget, the capital budget, and the mental health budget. Anything else? With that, we are adjourned.